Welcome to the Shakeout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Van Buskirk. Today is a rebroadcast of an episode that we released in November 2019. This is one of my favorite stories that we've covered on the Shakeout and through Canadian Running Magazine because it's an awesome combination of grit, hilarity, and inspiration. And honestly, who couldn't use a laugh and some motivation right now? Most of us couldn't imagine running 100 marathons in 5 months in even the sturdiest shoes. But for Anna McNuff, that distance alone wasn't enough. In June 2019, she set out to traverse the UK barefoot. Anna shares her tales of adventure throughout a five-month quest to spread positivity and encourage others to reach for the impossible. Anna McNuff has always been an adventurer. The daughter of two Olympic rowers, she grew up thinking it was normal to see Olympic medals hanging in your living room. She says that she won the gene pool when it comes to an athletic predisposition. And for many years, she pursued sports at a high level, even competing for the national rowing team and winning gold at the World University Games. Anna eventually left the competitive athletic world for a job in marketing. But her penchant for travel and her thirst for adventure never waned. After a few years behind a desk, she realized that she could no longer deny her inner explorer. She quit her job, bought a bike and a plane ticket, and in 2013, she pedaled solo and unassisted through all 50 U.S. states, raising money for the Right to Play charity. Since then, she's taken on numerous endurance challenges, including running the length of New Zealand. Condé Nast Traveler included her on a list of the 50 most influential travelers in the world. In 2018, she was named the Ambassador for Girl Guiding, the UK version of Girl Guides Canada. Driven by the goal of inspiring others to redefine their limits, she decided to take on her most daring challenge yet, running 100 barefoot marathons to encourage young women to reach for the impossible. I connected with the self-proclaimed mischief maker in her home in England to learn more about her British barefoot escapades.
Yeah, I know it sounds absolutely crazy, but to put it in context, I have done a long 2,000 mile run in trainers before. So I ran this trail through the length of New Zealand with all my stuff on my back over some mountains. So when I came to do this challenge, I thought I definitely want to do a new run and I think I want to do it in Britain. And because at that point I'd just become the UK ambassador for Girl Guiding. And I know you've got Girl Guiding over there in Canada. So you know what I mean when I say a bit of girl power action. And I thought, what's going to be my message for those young girls? What am I going to say to them about everything I've learned from all the adventures I've done over the past 10 years? And it really is that every time I've stood at the start line of one of my adventures, I have stood there and thought, what on earth am I doing? And I just want a hole to open up in the universe so I don't have to go through with what I've said to everyone I will do. And I've got all this, just a tornado of nerves and excitement. And I know now, looking back, that that feeling is a good feeling. So I thought, if I do a long run and I do it in trainers, and I'm stood at that start line in Britain, I know in my heart of hearts that I can do it. And I thought, I can't be talking to young girls about pushing themselves if I'm not on that journey myself and I'm not honest with them about pushing myself. So I just had this crazy idea of how could I make a long run harder? And it popped into my head the question of, why don't you do it in bare feet? And I thought, that's ridiculous. Straight away, I thought, you're mad, you can't do that. And then it just wouldn't leave me alone, that question. And after a couple of months, I thought, well, is it ridiculous? Dot, dot, dot. And that is how I ended up here.
The kind of mileage Anna was covering seems unfathomable to most people. But to do it without shoes, the one piece of equipment that our minimalist sport often necessitates, sounds like true madness. They say to be a runner, all you need is a pair of running shoes. But Anna turned that presumption on its head.
I've broken it. And I also tried to say to people, you know, I just have to be honest, this is relative for everyone, isn't it? For some people, running a 5K is as equally as difficult a challenge as this. But it's just about being honest with myself. And that's what I say to the girls as well. I don't know what your challenge is. That's up to you. You know, only you know if you're really pushing it or if you're cruising. So I went for pushing it.
To really understand where the drive comes from to take on seemingly impossible adventures, you have to know a little more about Anna's background.
I've come from quite a sporty background. So I've got parents that are Olympians. So which is, at first you think that's really normal when you're growing up and you think everyone's got crazy sporty parents, but then you realize you're a bit different. But I actually grew up doing a lot of elite sport, which, although it sounds like it would predispose me to do adventures, it's a whole other end of a spectrum, because that's all about looking at split times and really getting into the detail of performance training. Whereas what I do now with adventures, it's a lot more about seeing landscapes and chatting to people, stopping for coffee and cake. I love all that stuff. And so I guess I did get the fitness and the endurance and the love of testing my body from my youth and all my upbringing. But then it wasn't probably till my late 20s that I was sat in a desk job, and I just had this feeling that I wasn't for me. Everyone around me loved their jobs, and I realized that I didn't love my job, and that perhaps I was kind of in the wrong place in the universe at that point, and that I had a choice and I could do something about it. So I went off on my first adventure, which was to ride a giant pink bicycle through every state of America. And it just spiraled from there, really. I thought I just needed to get the adventure itch out of my system. And I came back and I'd met new people, I'd seen new places, and I'd written for the first time as well. I was writing a blog. And I just thought, this is what I'm supposed to do. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know how on earth I'm going to make a living from it, or if I am going to be able to. But this is what makes me feel like me, and I'm going to keep on doing it.
As you can imagine, preparing to cover nearly 4,000 kilometers without a vehicle, much less the protection of shoes, is, pardon the pun, no small feat. Anna's years of high-performance training meant that she was strong and tough, but her soles still needed some work before they'd be ready to carry her across country.
Yeah, I think the first thing is, when I came up with the idea, I almost made a deal with myself, which was, if you do this, Anna, you have to take it seriously, because I'm a little bit slapdash when it comes to training. I think because I've got a decent fitness base, I kind of think I can get away with a lot of stuff. And I've turned up before to the start of a 60-mile race and had not done any training. And I get through it, but it's so painful. And it's a long time before I want to do it again. So this time I said, if you're going to do this, I don't want to destroy my body. I want to make it to the end in reasonable shape and look after myself. So I actually started the training about a year and a half out from beginning the run. And I'd been in minimalist shoes for a few years anyway, as it just so happened, because I'd got curious about it and I'd enjoy the way it felt. So my calves and Achilles were a bit more used to being in minimalist footwear. But then I spent the first 6 month block just going out and running and building up my mileage in those minimalist shoes. And then I spent a next 6 month block running in, they're called Skinner's socks, but they're basically, they look like a wetsuit boot, a very thin sock that goes over your foot. And then I spent a further 6 months being barefoot. So it was 18 months of prep in total. And it was all just bit by bit. So I might go out for an 8 mile run, and in the last 2 miles, I'd put my socks on instead of my trainers. So I'd take it down a notch, you know, get closer to the ground. And then in the middle 6 months, I'd go out in my socks, and maybe in the last mile, I'd take my socks off and be barefoot. And so I'd gradually make that transition. But there was no way I was going to go out and run 20 odd miles every single day in training. So I still stood on that start line and thought, I'm as ready as I can be, but this is still going to be quite difficult. And I've got to let my body adjust in the first month to 6 weeks and see how I go.
In addition to the physical preparation, there was a crucial mental prep element of this journey. Luckily, Anna was able to draw on her previous adventures for a roadmap. Although this was the first time she was attempting a mega ultra barefoot run, she had plenty of learning experiences from her other exploits.
When you're about 6 months out from actually getting on the start line, all you have to deal with for that 6 months leading up is just anxiousness. You are just anxious. Your brain is going to all the places where it could go wrong. The little voice in your head that tells you you're mad and you're not going to be able to do it just is very loud. And so really all you want to do is start, but you're not quite there yet. You know, you need to put everything else in place. So I guess that's just about riding it out. And I happen to have a very supportive partner, my other half, Jamie McDonald, who ran across Canada. So that's why we love Canada. And so he's very supportive, and he's been through that set of emotions a lot as well. So you just have to sit with your fear. You can't do anything about it. You just have to acknowledge it, sit there and go, all right then, fear, let's hang out for until we get to the start. And I guess some of the things I was worried about is what would happen if I got 2 weeks in and I got a show-stopping injury. You know, I tore a muscle, or I got an injury that was going to take 3 months to heal, and I didn't have those 3 months.
The pressure was real for Anna. She had a hectic speaking schedule that involved an average of 3 talks per week with various Girl Guide units across the country. This meant that she had to keep moving steadily to fulfill the commitment she had made to thousands of girls. She brought on a team member to help with the logistics of the talks, and also relied heavily on the generosity of strangers throughout her journey.
About 6 months before I started the journey, I put up on social media, right, I'm running through the country. Who wants a smelly barefoot runner in their house and will feed me food and look after me? And the response was phenomenal. I was just blown away. And straight away, I think we had 200 emails on the first day. And then I just got offered to be hosted basically for almost the whole trip within about the space of a week. So that made me feel at ease. It made me feel like I wasn't crazy, and the people of Britain were out there ready to support me. I just needed to make it to them.
Wow. And that is remarkable. I mean, to have that many responses, to have that many strangers volunteer their homes and volunteer to feed you and shelter you and support you. Where do you think that came from? I mean, I think it would take something quite special for people to want to... for that many people to want to open up their homes and, yeah, volunteer their time and their support. Why do you think, what was the reception that you got for the most part? Where do you think that came from?
I think the reception I got was a lot from the fact that I was being honest about why I was doing it, and the fact that I wasn't confident that I was going to be able to do it, but that I was stood at that start line saying, I've got no idea if this is possible. I think it probably is, but here we go. Let's all go on a journey together. So I tried to bring people in right from the beginning on my fears and on the reality that I was testing myself, and I didn't know if I was going to do it. So I think that other people really felt like they were a part of the journey. And I always find, and I've found this on previous travels, the second you're vulnerable, you know, if you're on a bike or you're running and you're clearly in a vulnerable position, people just want to help you. They were just tripping over themselves to help you. And so I think I'd experienced that on previous adventures, cycling adventures and running adventures, where I had been taken in by people who just wanted to help. And I mean, that is my view of the world. I think we are a kind and generous race. And so I think having me knowing that, and then me putting it out there and just being honest with people, I think for some reason I had that amazing response, and it was just beautiful. So it really did feel like it was their journey as much as it was mine, especially when loads of them joined me as I ran through. They might host me for the night, but they would also get their trainers on because they're sensible, and they would come for a run with me as well.
Anna was joined by over 2,300 runners throughout the course of her journey. And although she said how deeply appreciative she was of the company, she also respected her own boundaries and need for solitude. All of this required a ton of logistic planning, and thanks to her marketing background, it paid off. She set up a calendar and map on her website, outlining approximately where she'd be each day. She sent confirmation emails, she organized a Facebook page, and her fan base grew steadily. She had pre-planned running buddies 3 to 4 days per week, and, particularly thanks to the Facebook group, she ensured that they knew more or less what they were getting themselves into.
That mainly just helped get rid of people's nervousness about running with me, because I think there was this belief that I was going to be running really fast and I was going to be this elite athlete. And they soon saw that I like to run at this thing called adventure pace, which is let's go all day, every day. Let's chat. Let's stop for coffee. And it's quite an accessible pace. And it was all about just enjoying ourselves. And if we went past a children's playground, we'd be on the playground as well, as long as there weren't any kids on it. And it was just about having fun. So, yeah, it was a logistical nightmare. But I did think very long and hard before I started about how I could set it up so that people got the communication they needed. But they also felt at ease about joining me and felt like it was going to be an enjoyable day out and something they wanted to be a part of.
And what a fabulous combination of a commitment to sport and activity and, you know, overall well-being, but also to fun and detours when they felt right. I mean, I think we live in a world that is so regimented. You go to the gym to work out or you go to the track to run and that's your workout time and then you have your play time. And it sounds like you did this fabulous job of melding those two things together. Was that part of the goal on the outset?
Yeah, and that was what was really fascinating. Something started happening once I'd had a few of these open stages and people run with me. People would turn up and say, I'm just going to run 5 miles or I'm just going to run 3 miles with you, and then I'll turn around. And they'd almost be explaining themselves to me and I'd say, oh, whatever, you know, come for as long as you like, don't worry. And I would never worry about how they were getting home. Like, that's all on them, you know, they can sort that out. And a lot of them would even have had an adventure getting to the start, the logistics of how they would get there. And then what happened that was really strange is 90% of them would run further than they intended to for a start, and then I'd probably say a good 30% of them would run further than they ever had before. And I wasn't doing anything, but what I realized was happening is, like you said, when you go out to work out or you go out for a run, you set aside an hour in your day. You probably know your route, you know exactly where you're going to go, you know what time you're going to be back. Whereas with my runs, I was very last minute with the logistics, so they might put an email, like I said, a few days before. So they generally had to block out their whole day, sort out childcare, and so they had this whole day to play. And people had taken days off work on a Wednesday and things like that. And so suddenly they're on a run, they've taken the time off, they've cleared their diary. You know, why would they turn around and go home after 3 miles when actually they could just keep going and get a bus or get a ride later on? So people just started running further and staying with me the whole day. And it was just amazing to watch. It was great.
Anna had a ton of support, but that didn't mean that she went without her hecklers.
Oh my gosh, so many. And I actually took a while to get used to it, because I'm not the kind of person who, although in one sense I don't care what people think, there is a part of me that when people are repeatedly telling you you're crazy and staring at you, you know, you do start to take it in. And I just wanted to run down the street and not have anyone look at me, but I've got bright pink hair and I'm in bare feet, so that's not going to happen. And it was really funny. People couldn't control what was coming out their mouth. They'd just look at me and then they'd look down at my feet and then they'd go, you've got no shoes on. Like that, or they'd just go, oh, is that a good idea? And all these things would just come out their mouth. And then I had one guy run out of his garden. It was in the north of England. They've got a very thick accent up there. And he was very concerned about a specific injury. I don't know if you've ever had plantar fasciitis, but he ran out of his garden and just pointed at my feet. And he was about 70 years old. And he just said, oh, no, 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 no. And I stopped and said, what? And he pointed at my feet and said, you'll get plantar fasciitis. And I said, no, thanks, I'm okay. I've done a few hundred miles to here. And he was like, no, I've had it. You're going to get it. Oh, be careful, lassie. So bizarre. He was so concerned about me getting plantar fasciitis.
For the record, she didn't get plantar fasciitis. You might have picked up on Anna's mention of her hot pink hair. She has an affinity for all things bright, outrageous, and fun, a style choice that was very well received by the young girls she was meeting with. And while she developed a reputation for sporting bold colors, it's a pair of unicorn leggings that have become her signature.
The unicorn leggings, which is this pair of tights which have a unicorn having a fight with a robot under a rainbow on them. They're the most ridiculous pair of leggings. You could not possibly be unhappy while you're wearing them. They've actually got a backstory, and they're called my pants of perspective, because when I was in New Zealand, I had a really tough day when I was running the trail there through the country, and I'd busted my ankle and I was down and out. I thought it was going to be the end of my journey. I'd sprained it really badly. I was in the middle of the bush. I had no one to speak to, no way of seeking counsel from anyone. And I wriggled myself into those ridiculous pair of leggings. And suddenly I snapped myself back to reality and just found a bit of confidence and thought, I'm okay. I've got food, I've got shelter, I've got water. I'm going to make a good decision here and I'm going to be able to push on. So they are my pants of perspective, which is, so I wrote a book called The Pants of Perspective. And a lot of people that follow me have a pair of pants of perspective, or they have their own pair that don't have a unicorn on them. But something to, yeah, just make them feel like themselves and snap them back to a point where they think, you know, I've got this.
Did your pants of perspective or something else come into play? Because I would imagine that there, you know, you radiate, you know, positivity and optimism and you had all of this support. But I can imagine that there must have been moments along this journey that were really, really difficult. Can you tell us about some of those moments and how you saw your way through them?
Definitely. And I think if you're a person who experiences great highs, what comes with that is the great lows. And there were some moments where I was really struggling. The darkest moment in the run was I was 1,000 miles in and I had a tiny cut in my foot. And I'm talking no bigger than any other cut I'd had, absolutely tiny, but it had actually gone quite deep. So it'd gone down below the hard skin and into some kind of blood vessel. And I got infected. And so my foot just blew up. And that was something I'd never experienced before. And it was so painful that took me off my feet for 2 weeks. And in that 2 weeks, I just thought, have I ended the run? Is this it, done? Am I only going to make it 1,000 miles? And all of the feelings of almost shame and embarrassment that came with that, I had to just ride those out. And just the unknowing, I'm sitting there thinking, all I want to do is run and I can't run. And I've got no one or nothing to tell me when this foot is going to be fixed. I've just got to go day by day. And I'd open my eyes in the morning and I'd think, I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to put my foot on the floor because I don't want to know if it's painful or not, because if it's painful, I'm not going running today again. And the miles were just slipping by. And because I had all these talks booked in a really hectic schedule, there wasn't a place to make up miles. That was the toughest part of the run, I would say, not being able to run. I also hit a low with about 3 weeks to go. I hit a massive low where every mile felt like it was taking me an hour. And I just thought, my mind has gone. My motivation had gone. I knew I was going to find a way to get to the end, but everything just felt like swimming in treacle. So I know I am a positive person, but it's not to say that I don't experience all the other stuff. I am positive 90% of the time, but there are very, very tough times. And I've got loads of little tools to try and get my way through those.
Part of what kept her going during those tough times was remembering the moments of deep inspiration and pure joy that sustained her day after day.
In terms of the places that I was seeing, I mean, I know Britain reasonably well, but I now know it even better. And I think to find so much beauty in your own country and to explore these places you've never been before, that was just felt like such a privilege. And I was blown away. We've got some amazing beaches. You know, I know we've not got big mountains like Canada. You know, you're a bit spoiled over there. But we have these incredible Yorkshire Dales and the lakes, all those areas. And there was a day when I was up in the Yorkshire Lakes, up high on a hill, and I'm running down into this beautiful green valley and the sun's going down, my favourite time of day, and there's sheep all around me with their waggly tails that make me laugh. And I just thought, man, you know, there is nowhere else in the world I'd rather be right now than here. So when I was really connected with nature, that was pretty special. And then other high points, oh, it's just always going to be about people making me laugh. On Halloween, everyone dressed up and some guy turned up dressed as a lobster. And he ran 24 miles dressed as a lobster. So we kept shouting at him. I don't know why, in American accent, be like, hey, you're one inspirational lobster man. And so he was loving it. So those things just made me laugh. And then the girl guides as well. There was one talk I did where there were 500 of them in a theater in one city, and they went nuts at me like I was a pop star. They were screaming and they just loved it. So I basically just, it was the people and the things I saw that were the high points.
So I've been speaking with a few people about what you were doing and the fact that I was going to chat with you, and a bunch of my runner friends all had the same question. So I just have to ask it. What is the weirdest or grossest thing that you stepped on?
Okay. Are you ready for this? Right. So, I mean, I've stepped in every kind of poo, and poo really didn't bother me by the end. I'm talking seagull poo, pigeon poo, dog poo's really sticky, so I tried to avoid dog poo because it would just stick to you. And sheep poo does this weird thing where you stand on it and it goes like almost like a nuclear mushroom between your toes and explodes upwards. So that was never fun. But the worst thing I stepped in was one day I was on a back country back road. I'd got lost and I'd got my phone out to see where I'd gone wrong. and I was looking at my phone. I stepped backwards in the road and my foot went in something cold and wet. And I thought, it's probably a bit of mud or poo. I'm not really bothered at this point. And then I put my phone away and I looked down and I was stood in a dead rabbit. I was like a cat on a hot tin roof. I just leapt upwards. I was dead before I stood on it, I promise. And then I just ran off down the road. I was just scampering off down the road, just pulling this face of, oh my gosh, that was so disgusting. Yeah, gross. But the kids love the story. When I tell the guys, they love it. It's great.
All right. So speaking of your feet, how are they now? How are you feeling and how have you been recovering?
They're good. You know, I'm actually quite sad because day by day, I finished 4 days ago now, and I am slowly watching the skin soften and I can see the changes, and it makes me quite sad because I think my feet will probably never be as strong again as they are right now. And so that's sad, but they feel fine. And actually one of the things that is quite a relief is quite often, especially in the summer, they would tingle because, you know, we've got like 7,000 nerve endings on each sole of our foot, and they would tingle until about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I found this herbal oil that would stop the tingling. But it's just quite nice to go to sleep and not have tingly feet. So, I just love my feet. I'm so proud of them. You know, I sort of want to just say thanks and well done for carrying me all those miles. I think some people hate their feet, but I really have just had a new love affair with my own feet, which I think is a nice thing.
As Anna's feet continue to soften, her mind inevitably turns to the question that is ever present for true adventurers. What next?
Normally, when I finish an adventure, there's normally this 6-month period where you ride out the post-adventure roller coaster, ups, downs, and get back to normal life. And then at some point, a new adventure idea will just start kind of just gradually growing in the corner of your mind. And then eventually it'll start grabbing for your attention. You can't ignore it. So I'm fully accepting that I'm going to go on that journey at some point. And there will be another one. And I don't know what it is, but that's quite exciting. I'm smiling as I say it because I've got no idea what it's going to be. But our immediate adventure is, as I mentioned, me and Jamie McDonald, who ran across Canada. We've been doing these adventures now for a fair few years, and we're really keen to start a little adventure family. So that is our focus, really. It's like, well, let's start on that journey and see what happens. And I'm really excited about that. So we're going to work out how on earth we do this with kids and go down that road.
As an update, Anna and her partner Jamie had their first child, a baby girl named Storm, just last month. And by all accounts, so far, they're loving this new adventure. You can follow Anna's journey on social media at Anna McNuff, or pick up one of her 3 books, Pants of Perspective, 50 Shades of the USA, and Llama Drama. You can follow us at Shakeout Podcast, and don't forget to subscribe to our show on iTunes. Thanks for tuning in. Stay safe and healthy, and we'll chat again soon.